court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Tommy, I just watched an amazing soccer match.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was part of the UEFA Cup. I watched Sevilla versus Manchester United. There's an amazing goalkeeper play from De Gea, the Manchester United goalkeeper. It was pretty exhilarating.
I only understood about 33% of those words.
Well, football
being very good to me. Well, I don't know that game. I don't know. That's soccer, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't watch soccer.
You know me. I'm a soccer player.
You're so. An international kind of guy.
Well, and plus I played soccer pretty much my whole life. So.
Well, that's true. That's true. Hey, I wanted to correct something from last time that I screwed up on.
Oh, boy.
Steve Laverne let me know. He was the one that posted that story about the battle of all time against the Constitution about the speeding ticket camera.
Yep.
And all that. He's the one that posted that. And I wrongly identified Joseph Atwell, who has posted several other things for us. But apparently that was Steve Laverne on that. And it's my mistake, Steve.
Let's take away Joseph Atwell's star. And yeah. We'll give that to
take
Steve
it down.
Laverne.
Scrape it off the board we keep here for our star listeners that chime in and take his gold star down and put one up for Steve.
Hold on a second. Let me walk over here and scrape it off right now.
We'll both drink a beer as we put Steve's star up.
Well, that's an unforgivable error.
Give credit where credit's due.
That's right.
I don't have much of a memory anymore. It's a wonder I make it find my basement to do this.
Just, well, all you got to do is just go down, like fall down. Like you can do that.
I usually do that.
Well, this episode, I don't think anybody suggested this one, so there's no gold star for anybody.
No, this came out of your head.
I know, that's the scary part. And this episode's going to be about juries.
Juries?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
like 12 Angry Men type juries?
Yes, kind of. That's one type of jury.
All right.
There actually are different kinds of juries in the American legal system. And I think the most common type that you always hear about is what you're talking about is the 12 Angry Men type one, like a criminal trial. But there's actually different kinds.
Yeah.
So I actually learned that there was a different kind of jury I'd never even heard about. So there's three kinds of juries in the United States or in general.
Good, bad, and indifferent.
Yeah. The first type that I'd never heard of before, which I kind of learned about, is called a coroner's jury.
Coroner's jury? That sounds like somebody's dead.
That's exactly what it means. Sometimes it's called an inquest, mm-hmm. and that's where a jury is assembled to determine the identity of a deceased person and the cause of their death. And like I said, I had actually never even heard of this before.
A jury?
Yeah.
I would think there would be investigators that would be their job.
Well, the coroner is a state official or a county official, and they would basically present their case to this jury and let the jury decide the facts. Like, they'd be a finder of fact as to who the person's identity was and what killed him.
Is this common in all states?
No, it is not. It is extremely rare, and I've never even heard of it anymore. that's probably why I had no idea what it was.
I would say I've never heard of that.
To give you an example of when this was commonplace, a coroner's jury was convened and deemed that Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday were guilty in the death of Frank Stillwell.
Yeah.
So back, this is talking like back in like kind of 1800s.
Early 1800s, yeah.
Yeah, so it's something in this day and age you really don't hear, they don't really do anymore. The role has basically been taken over by the coroner themselves. So the coroner makes this determination.
Or the police would make an determination, wouldn't they?
Well, I mean, the police don't make a determination as a cause of death.
No,
unless like the guy's like head's cut off, and then like, well, this guy doesn't have a head. That's his cause of death. No head.
Well, but that really might not be his cause of death. It could have been post-mortem. That's what we in the biz say. That's a
in the biz.
Term. Yeah.
What are you all doing down there in Tridata? This is not exactly what I thought you were doing.
Hey, let's just say I like Dexter a lot.
But yeah, for the most part, the coroner is the one that kind of makes the determination, I think, as to what the cause of death was. So an inquest or a coroner's jury is not something that I've ever been familiar with or heard about in my years of legal practice. So, but that's one type of jury, is a coroner's jury.
I hope I never appear before one of those.
You don't want to run for coroner?
No, I don't mean that. I mean, you know, if that kind of jury is deciding my fate, I don't want to be...
Your fate's already been decided at that point. Now, the second kind of jury is called a petit jury. And it's
petit.
P-E-T-I-T. You might even say...
Petticoat Junction?
Petite.
A petite jury.
Yeah.
So it's all little guys.
That's exactly right.
It's like Peter Dinklage leads the crew there or something, huh?
One of my first jokes I think I remember you making was when my mother got called for jury duty. And I think you had said something, and it said in the notice maybe if she was called for a petit jury or petite jury. And I think you made a joke that since she was a little woman, that it was a petite jury. That's what she was called for.
She fit the description.
Yes. She was lucky to push 5 foot, I think.
Yeah. She was about 4'9", but she could take down a 7-footer.
Yeah. She was. Her size was not indicative of her fight.
That's right. It's not the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the dog.
Exactly.
That dog just don't hunt.
But now a petit jury, and that's how I always pronounce it, is petit jury. I guess you could say petit jury or whatever.
I think petit is correct.
Yeah.
In all my years of legal study, that's the way I've heard it.
And generally, that's what you see in movies. That's like sometimes called a trial jury. They're the ones that hear evidence presented at trial, and they are essentially the finders of fact at a trial. They hear the jury instructions from the judge. They deliberate, go back in the room, deliberate, reach a verdict. Hopefully it's in my client's favor. That's, you know, pretty much what they do. So that's the second kind. It's called a petit jury.
If you don't win, we don't get paid. Is that what your motto is?
Sometimes. Sometimes I get paid regardless. And I like those cases.
Yeah, I guess so. Ah, too bad for you. Here's your invoice.
I don't have a dog in this hunt. Or fight or something. I don't know. I'm mixing my idioms. So
don't call yourself an idiot.
So this can result in a hung jury, basically, you know, one of these trials or things like that. And that's where a jury is basically unable to come to a verdict.
Well, you know what a hung jury is.
I'd see you chomping at the bit here. So
that's a jury of my peers, remember? You walked into that one a while back.
I did.
That was like episode 3 or 4 or something like that.
I walked into it again.
Yeah.
Now, if you do have a hung jury or a jury of your peers, they're given what's called an Allen charge.
And
that's what the judge basically reads to them, which tries to get the jury to reexamine their opinions about the case. It's kind of a last-ditch effort to prevent the jury from being hung or deadlocked. Maybe let's go with deadlocked from now on. That's a better word to use.
That a better term?
Yeah, a deadlocked jury.
Well, that must just be one of something of nuisance because I could an Allen. What'd you call it? An Allen what?
Charge.
An Allen charge. Mm-hmm. An Allen wrench. I hate Allen wrenches. Those are the worst things ever invented. They should outlaw those. Just put a damn screw in there and let's use a screw with a screwdriver head works in. My rant about Allen wrenches.
I like Allen wrenches. I don't necessarily like the actual wrenches themselves, but I do like the different bits you can put on screwdrivers to use because they get a better fit.
I'm talking about those little bitty L-shaped ones that you get in every box of furniture or kids' toys or whatever, and you got to use those little Allen wrench things.
Yeah, but they actually make bits you can put onto different drivers and use those instead.
I'm not that sophisticated. I just use the little thing that comes in the box, and it tears your hand up.
Now, this Allen charge, when I always heard this, I always thought it was kind of like a charge to the jury, like a depth charge to go in there and blow them up and shake them up, which I guess it kind of has that. Well,
he's saying go back and do better, right?
Pretty much.
Come to a decision. We don't want this.
But it's also kind of like a charge. You know, I charge you to do this. You know, kind of like I am asking you to do this, or I'm, you know, telling you to do this. So, and Allen was a case. It was like where the charge comes from. I didn't research that. So
Allen versus somebody.
Yeah, Allen versus somebody.
Or somebody versus Allen.
U.S. v. Allen.
U.S. v. Allen.
Yeah. So there was probably something that the judge basically said to the jury, said, hey, get back in there and figure this out.
Probably somebody that was suing the Allen wrench people for making such a lousy product.
And part of what the judge says, the last trial I had, actually, the judge gave an Allen charge, And it talks about judicial economy. And basically, if you don't come to a decision, we're not going to have a result in this case. We're going to have to get more jurors and come back and do this whole thing over again.
You're costing the taxpayers money.
Yeah. So why don't you get in there and just do your job, you dumbass.
Do your job, be a dumbass. Is that what you said?
I said, do your job, dumbass. Make a decision. So,
well, you should just be direct and say it that way.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't say that.
I instruct you now to either vote the way I'm telling you to, or you're a dumbass.
Now,
one of
the hallmarks of our judicial system is essentially that a jury verdict needs to be unanimous, that everyone has to agree as to what the outcome of this case is supposed to be.
Right. One person can hang you up.
That's right. But there is an exception to that.
A lone holdout.
There's an exception.
Yeah.
In Oregon and Louisiana, they allow for non-unanimous jury verdicts. Most felony defendants can be convicted of a 10-2 vote in those states. So basically, if you have a case and it's like a burglary charge and 10 jurors say he's guilty and 2 say, no, not guilty, still guilty. Doesn't have to be unanimous.
Wow, sounds like the mercy rule.
The mercy rule?
Yeah.
They're getting beat up so bad.
Yeah, that's already 10 runs up in the bottom of the fourth, so the game's over.
And that's really kind of an aberration, because that is pretty rare that you have that rule, because that's one of the hallmarks of our legal justice system, is that a jury verdict must be unanimous for the most part. For certain things, though, manslaughter, rape, arson, murder, like the so-called capital offenses, even in those states, it's required to be unanimous, though, because those are kind of the more serious charges. So they're kind of drawing a line there, like, well, this is a really serious charge, so we're going to have to make sure you really prove it.
Take the kinda out of there. Those are the serious charges. Yeah, they are. I'm not sure of anything more serious than any of those.
No, those are the big ones.
Those are the big ones, boys. Step right up.
But evidently, the Oregon district attorneys are leading a ballot initiative here recently to get rid of that and require that it has to be unanimous.
Well, I can understand that.
But the district attorneys, these are the people that actually have to prosecute the cases. They're trying to make their own job harder.
Oh, well, that's true. Of course.
Which is just kind of strange if you think about it.
Well, I would also figure that there's probably a lot of people challenging that as well.
There might be, but maybe they're actually interested in the injustice.
I mean, I could say, though, that if I was convicted of something on a 10-2 vote, I would certainly want my lawyer to go challenge that when it has to be 12-0 everywhere else in the country.
I would be a little salty.
Yes, salty. Like a peanut.
Definitely like a peanut.
Or a pretzel.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, hungry. if you have 48 states where it has to be one thing and two where it has to be something else. I mean, that seems a little off kilter.
Well, I say if you go into the history of that and look at what's behind it, I would say there's probably some type of bias or prejudice that was involved in that happening in the first place.
Well, it's very funny you should mention that, because it actually, the Oregon law comes from a 1934 murder case that we're actually going to go into more in depth next week.
Oh, well, good. Then we'll find out about it then.
You seem very surprised about that.
No.
That's right. We're giving you a brief trailer for next week. We're going to talk about a 1934 murder case in Oregon.
It's just like a teaser from Walking Dead.
That's right.
We're the talking dumb.
Now, in the United States here, we have juries in civil and criminal cases. Outside of the U.S., juries are generally not really used in civil cases. They basically go before a judge or a board or something along those lines. Now, right to a jury trial is something you have to request in your pleadings.
In a civil suit?
Yeah, in a civil suit. So whenever you file a complaint against somebody, like in an auto accident, you would have to demand a jury trial. That's always the last thing you put in right before you put your signature block in. You say, and furthermore, we demand a jury trial.
Now, can either side call for it, the prosecution or the defense?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I guess you don't really have a prosecution and defense.
No, it's a plaintiff and defendant.
Yeah.
But the plaintiff always basically requests a jury trial. They should, at least, because you can get rid of it later on, but you can't get it back if you don't ask for it. So you always ask for it.
Well, why wouldn't the defense want to call for it sometimes?
Well,
I mean, can a jury trial favor them? Like, say you're in a small town or something like that, and you're a real popular person there. Maybe everybody likes you. So they'll find in your favor if you have a jury of your peers there.
If a plaintiff does not request a jury trial, and the defense wants a jury trial, mm-hmm. then, I mean, that would probably be an issue that you have to research case law and to determine what controls that. I don't know. I've never actually seen that happen before. I mean, usually it's pretty much cut and dry. You agree. The attorneys agree, like, yeah, this is a jury trial issue or this is not a jury trial issue. Hmm. Things that are contract-driven, like business disputes, things like that, those are almost always non-jury trials because you really don't want a jury deciding these kinds of super complicated business-type things. You'd rather have a judge doing it.
True.
Because it's a little bit harder to explain to a jury. Whereas things like personal injury, auto accidents, medical malpractice, and criminal stuff, a jury is well-suited to do those types of things.
Well, I mean, a plaintiff's motivation is in a civil trial like that, they're wanting to play on the jury's emotions probably to get extra money out of it or whatever because they're looking for, what do you call that?
Payday?
Well, a payday, yeah.
Windfall?
Make it rain. No, what do you call it when you get damages above and beyond what you actually incurred?
You mean punitive?
Punitive, yeah. Well, that was the word I was searching for.
Yeah, but
I mean, usually if you want good punitive damages, you want to get it from a jury trial because they're the ones that'll say, oh, that was a large company that he worked for and they didn't care about him. Let's give him $1 million. They got him.
Punitive damages are different than other damages. Punitive damages are meant to punish, whereas compensatory damages are ones that are basically to compensate you for your loss.
Well, I think of ones like suffering and anguish or whatever. Yeah, I know that's not really punitive.
No, it's not.
But
those are your actual damages.
Well, they're not really.
Yeah, they are.
They're not losses. They're not like money you put out and you're trying to get back.
They are. Because here's the deal. There is no way to put an adequate. There's no way if you get hurt in an accident and you hurt your back and you are bound to a wheelchair for a couple weeks and then, you know, a few more weeks you have trouble walking and you can't pick things up. You can't do your own laundry. Somebody else has to wipe your butt. You know, things like that.
I don't know anybody that good.
Well, I'm just saying things like that. You know, you can't really put a price tag on that. There's no adequate way that this person is going to make you whole for what you
Your lawyer will make you, your lawyer will help you put a price tag on that.
Well, no, in our society, the only thing that we have that can actually compensate you for that is money. We don't have a way to actually compensate you for that. There's no way you're going to get that period of your life back that you suffered through that. So the only way we can even try to attempt to make you whole is to give you money. And that's why it is compensatory and not punitive.
I understand, but I'm kind of jaded. I see a lot of people that take advantage of those kind of things. So I'm skeptical about that. I'm just jaded. That's all there is to it.
Well, I personally have had an auto accident myself and had some neck pain and problems like that and had to go through that. And I know that whatever money I got from it was definitely not worth having to go through what I went through. And if I could exchange that money for that, I'd do it in a heartbeat. And I think most people probably would agree with that. So I know I understand you're jaded. I don't exactly understand why you're jaded, but nonetheless.
You know those cases where the guy's sitting there in court with his neck brace on and somebody drops a book and he turns and looks?
Yeah. Well,
those kind.
That's true. How many times have you actually seen that in person?
I've seen it on TV a lot.
In commercials, but from insurance companies?
Yeah, or, you know, comedies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe once or twice on SVU.
Well, anyway, back to juries. A jury generally consists of 12 people. That's kind of what it essentially is. Sometimes it can actually be six. In Florida, a jury of six can be used in felony cases, in Connecticut as well. And as a side note, Scotland uses 15. They're very careful in Scotland.
Really?
Yeah.
Man. Well, is there any reason behind the numbers of it? Is it just the sheer number of people that you have to try to make understand something? It's easier in some trials to just have 6 and 12 or something?
Well, it's just, I mean, it's easier to have, just to get a jury of 6 people, I guess, for a lot of cases.
You know? I mean, what determines it? Is it the type of case or is it your request?
No. In Florida and Connecticut, it's 6 generally for most cases.
Oh, okay. And those two states only.
Again, back to the capital offenses, it would have to be 12, probably in those states. But for the most part, just they're the two states that say it can be less than 12. Most states it is 12, though.
It's hard to round 12 people up.
It is. It's harder. So it changes your the way you view it, too. You can say, let's just put 6 people in the box and go. Or you say, let's just put 12 people in the box and go. It depends on how you want to make your flamboyant argument to the opposing side. Like, we got such a great case. I don't even care.
pick whoever you want. Put them in there.
It doesn't matter.
Slam dunk.
Our case is that strong. Put 12 in the box and let's go. I've actually never said that before.
You'd like to, though, wouldn't you?
If I ever had a case that strong. The case is what you make it sometimes. So that's pretty much the jury that you hear about the most, the Pettit jury or the trial jury. And that's one you always see on TV for the most part. And that's when you think of a jury, that's pretty much what you're thinking of.
Okay.
Now, the last kind of jury is the one that I really wanted to talk about, which I think is one of the more interesting ones. And it is called the grand jury.
Oh, because they're grand.
That's right. That's one that I really want to go more in depth about. Now, a grand jury is kind of a special type of jury that meets to determine if there is enough evidence in order to go to trial in a criminal case. So,
You return a grand jury indictment.
That's right.
I've heard that language.
You've already starting to spout off some of the nomenclature there.
Yeah, nomenclature.
So if a grand jury issues and returns an indictment for a crime, then basically the person has to go on then to be arraigned in front of the judge, and that's when you proceed to trial. But the grand jury is the first step in proceeding to trial. A lot of times before you have the grand jury meeting, you'll have what's called a preliminary hearing to determine if there's probable cause to bind the case over to the grand jury.
That's just in front of a judge, though, right?
The grand jury?
No, the preliminary.
It is, yeah. Usually it's in front of a lesser judge. So, a Pettit judge.
A Pettit judge,
if you will.
I've got to appear in front of a lesser judge. Give me a full-fledged good judge, or I'm not up here. I want a grand judge. I'm not appearing in front of a lesser judge.
The interesting thing in this day and age, grand juries are almost exclusively used in the United States.
Really?
Yep.
To return an indictment?
Yep. One other place where they use it a lot is Liberia, which is, of course, where the United States set up that government when they repatriated slaves to Africa, I believe, is the basis of where Liberia was founded.
Really?
I'm completely speaking out of my rectum with regards to that, but that's my understanding of what Liberia is. I think Liberia was a country set up by the United States, I think. And that's probably why it still has those vestiges of the United States government.
If you say so, I'll believe it, because I don't have a clue.
But grand juries were basically discontinued in England and most other common law jurisdictions and replaced with some other form of hearing to determine probable cause. Now, 48 states and District of Columbia use a grand jury. Pennsylvania and Connecticut have somewhat abolished the system of the whole grand jury thing. There's 23 states that actually require an indictment to be returned by a grand jury for a felony crime to proceed. And actually, West Virginia is one of them. So that's probably why you've heard that term so much, that a grand jury returned an indictment.
So if you've been charged with a felony, your first step is a preliminary hearing to see if there's just cause. Your second step is to go before a grand jury to see if there's enough evidence to present an indictment.
Exactly.
And then at that point, then you go into trial and they have another jury, a Pettit jury.
Correct.
That's there to actually judge whether you're guilty or not.
Exactly.
Man, that's a complicated process. We need to cut out a few middlemen there and save some money.
I don't know about that. I mean, how much does it actually cost?
Who knows? That's the problem.
Now, other states that don't have the grand jury system, what they do is they just file what's called an information. And that's kind of like just a general complaint that lets them know, the defendant, what they're being charged with. Grand juries are particularly interesting because they're very secretive.
Ooh. Yeah. You don't know who they are?
Nope.
They wear hoods in and out?
No, don't think so.
Oh, okay.
But the transcripts of grand juries are generally not available unless you make a special motion for them to try to get them. Because essentially at the grand jury, there's going to be some sort of testimony that is given there.
Oh, and you don't want to prejudice potential jurors that might read about that in the paper and then they already know about the case.
Well, I mean, that's part of it. But at the same time, too, it's kind of puts the prosecution, I guess, maybe at a slightly unfair disadvantage to have to give away prior testimony to a certain degree. But one of the things I always do, and most criminal defense attorneys would do as well, is a motion to have the grand jury transcripts. So that way you can see what was said at the grand jury. And that way, if there is any kind of inconsistent statement at trial, you can call the evidence out and discredit it in front of the Pettit jury to hopefully get your client off.
So. Well, it sounds like it's not as secretive as you first led me to believe.
It is.
If the other guy just has to ask for it, then that's the end of the secrecy.
Well, but you have to kind of give a good reason why you need it for the most part.
Because I want to see it to help my client.
That's a good reason.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. It's no longer a secret.
Well, how about this? Sometimes the indictments are sealed.
Well, all you have to do is ask to unseal it.
Well, you might remember this. There was a case recently with the whole Russia Trump type investigation by the special prosecutor, Robert Mueller.
Mm-hmm.
So usually whenever...
I heard a little about that.
Yeah. Usually whenever indictments are returned, they're filed and become part of the public record so you can see them.
Right.
But there are special rules of procedure which allow you to seal an indictment and maintain their secrecy. And it's basically done so that the person who's being arrested doesn't know that they're going to be arrested, and it can prevent spoliation of evidence, fleeing, and also possibly not compromising other parts of the investigation. So you can actually seal an indictment.
Well, I can understand that there's still people out there to round up that were you came to light during this preliminary hearing or whatever like that.
But eventually, they become sort of unsealed whenever the person first appears in court.
Sure.
So they're not secret that long.
Yeah.
So it's... You know, maybe not that secretive.
Man, I thought we were like a secret society of people that come in and they're in robes and they're all humming.
It's a secret, a secret grand jury with a secret indictment that is sealed.
That's right. We found him enough evidence to find him
for about two culpable. Or three, for about 2 or 3 days. And that's open. But.
Well, they're not so grand after that.
I don't know. I just always think the grand jury is pretty interesting. So
well, I guess so. I guess it'd be easier to do that. Enough evidence? Yeah, enough evidence. Okay, pass it on. I mean, well, you're not really deciding somebody's fate at that point. You're
no.
You're just saying, yeah, they've got a case. Yeah, go ahead. Well, I don't know if they have a case or not, but, you know, let's give them a shot. They're gamers.
Well, there is a common phrase out there that basically says that a prosecutor could probably indict a ham sandwich if they did their job right.
Well, I understand that.
It's not.
I would eat a ham sandwich.
Not super difficult. Sometimes it's funny, you read these grand jury transcripts and you see where the prosecutor presented their case, and then basically somebody on the grand jury will start asking the witness questions while they're on the stand, and they always ask them, you know, these kind of strange off the wall questions. They really take the role to heart. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get to the bottom of this case.
And you're allowed to on a grand jury. You can ask witnesses questions.
The grand jurors can. Yeah.
You just raise your hand and say, "I got a question."
Yeah, I got a question for this guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that. That's different than a trial because an appellate jury, they can't do that, can they?
No. And it's
now they can submit written questions to the judge to clarify things.
Right.
Or something.
But that's something totally different.
Yeah. But as far as asking a witness questions, they can do that in a grand jury.
Yeah, the grand jury can do that.
I'd try to trick them. I'd raise my hand and say, all right, now tell me, did you do it or not?
Well, no, but usually they don't have the actual person who they're trying to indict there to testify.
Oh, they've got the other people there.
Yeah, because basically all they have to do is put on a probable cause or a prima facie case for this. So, you know,
so the guy being indicted may not even be there?
Oh, he's definitely not there. Almost always is never there.
Oh.
And his attorney's not there.
So nothing to do with the defense is there. It's all just a prosecution that's presenting this to the grand jury. I don't understand why you're saying it would give away part of their case, because they're going to talk about all the evidence they have. Of course, any evidence they have should have been given to the defense attorney as well.
Well, not you said past tense. It would be given to them at a later date for the most part.
Before the trial.
Before the trial, yeah.
Yeah, because you can't surprise them with things.
Exactly. No trial by ambush.
Aha! What about this here? You didn't know about this. I have this fragment of hair. You didn't know about that, did you?
Here's this glove that will obviously fit you. Try it on.
Yes.
Oh, no.
That was a bad idea.
It doesn't fit.
Then you must acquit.
Now, sometimes, too, the grand jury is not just there for like a day or two. They'll be there for a period of time, and they'll be always ready to hear whatever the prosecutor has to do. And they might be there for a couple weeks, maybe during the entire term of that court.
Wow.
So they keep getting called back.
They just sit there eating ham sandwiches, waiting for somebody to show up and tell them something.
Indicting those ham sandwiches.
Ask some questions.
Now, the grand jury is much bigger than the Pettit jury, which is probably where it gets its name.
Grand jury.
Yeah.
Like a grand piano?
Kind of. Except it doesn't have any keys.
Oh.
And
they should have the key to the case.
Hooray, metaphors. The grand jury has usually 16 to 23 people.
Wow.
So it's quite a bit larger than a...
Do they have to have 100% vote in favor?
No, they don't.
Just a majority?
I think it's just a majority. I actually don't even know.
A simple majority.
Yeah. Probably is just a majority, I would assume. You can't have 23 people agreeing on anything, really.
No.
Now,
especially on Facebook.
No kidding. The function of a grand jury essentially is to accuse people who may be guilty of an offense. But the grand jury procedure is also kind of a shield against unfounded or oppressive prosecution as well. It used to be that your average citizen could go before the grand jury and lay out their case against somebody else before we actually had a state-funded prosecutor. Mm. So as you can see, probably back then, it would be much more important to have kind of a threshold barrier to say, you know, well, Tom Smurl's here saying that so-and-so did this, that, and the other. And they're like, well, we don't believe him. His word's not worth a hill of beans. So
Everybody knows that's the line of sheep in the county.
That dog won't hunt. Line of sheep in the county. So, but in this day and age, you know, basically it's kind of shifted away in the United States from that threshold type procedure where it once was. But it does allow for a layperson or representative of the community to kind of get into the administration of justice and come to the courthouse and make a determination about whether or not these presentments to the grand jury are actually a crime or if they're just kind of like not really that big of a deal. So
would I be wrong in assuming that at a grand jury trial that there's no audience?
No, there's no audience. That's what I thought. Secret.
Because they are in a Pettit trial, but I thought it wouldn't be a secret very long if there were people in there watching,
like in a regular trial. You cannot take cameras in there. There's no access to the courts. I mean, I was a law clerk for a judge, and when the grand jury was meeting in the courtroom, I wasn't allowed in there.
Hmm.
It's secret. So.
And they have to whisper when they speak?
No, but I think they do whistle while they work. Is the other side of
and
it.
And the transcriber does it in like a secret code so nobody knows what it says.
That's right.
They had to get Navajo natives to come decipher it.
The wind talkers?
Yeah.
It's a secret wind talker indictment. It's very, very, very obscure. The mode of accusation is generally a written statement describing the offense, and it talks about the different time, circumstances, where it happened, and what took place.
Who, what, when, and where?
Yeah.
Those are the basic questions we all have.
Yep. The accused, whoever it is, they're trying to present this case, has absolutely no knowledge or any kind of right to be there or try to present any kind of rebuttal defense for this. It's essentially just them putting on their case and them saying, yeah, I think you got a threshold case there, or no, I don't think you do. So that's why the joke is you could indict a ham sandwich, because... Oh. It's easy pickings.
Well, now, a grand jury must be seated differently than a Pettit jury then, because I don't see any reason why you would interview people about anything because they're going to hear several cases, right?
Oh, like voir dire?
Yeah.
No, there's no voir dire in grand jury.
It's just they pick 23 people, 23 names, and you show up, or they pick however many names, and the first 23 are it.
No, I mean, the judge goes through and asks them some basic questions, like, you know, do you feel like there's any reason you couldn't serve on this? You know, things like that, the basic threshold questions. Are you going to be able to be here during this whole term? Will you be here however long it needs to be? So they'll ask those basic questions, but, you know, not really anything about the case.
And what do you call it? Voir dire?
Voir dire.
Voir dire. It's kind of like voyeur.
A little bit. V-O-I-R space D-I-R-E. Voir dire. Maybe say it. Voir dire. Voir dire. You want to say it?
I know I saw the word, and I didn't know exactly how you say that. I knew you had said it before, but I couldn't remember how you said that. I'm not too good on them fancy words.
Those 50-cent words?
Yeah.
Now, if the grand jury finds that the accusations presented to them are true, which usually they do, it's drawn up in a form by the prosecutor, who writes on the indictment that a true bill is returned and then it's signed by the foreperson of the grand jury. And then at that point, unless it's sealed, it's presented to the court publicly in the presence of all the jurors. So basically at that point it becomes known. And that's when you see in the paper that the grand jury returned the following indictments, and they'll list everybody's name.
Hear ye. The grand jury has determined that there is enough evidence to prosecute Mike Meadows.
You know what's funny is there's a Mike Meadows around here that has run amok of the law recently.
And everybody thinks it's you, huh?
Well, no.
They know what a scoundrel you are.
His name is Matthew Michael Meadows, and he was a convicted of some sort of federal drug charges or something like that. So, yeah, whenever I Google myself occasionally to determine how well my marketing appears, whenever people search for me.
You're not supposed to admit in public that you Google yourself.
But when I do, this Matthew Michael Meadows, who is a federal inmate, pops up every now and then.
It'd be funny if you represented him.
It would be funny.
You all both got in there, Mike Meadows, yes, and you both say yes. and if they it would really be funny if like they got screwed up and put the wrong one of you in jail.
Yeah, that'd be real funny. Sounds like an Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah, we could make a sitcom around that.
It's the Three's Company episode where there was that subtle misunderstanding, you know.
And the wrong Mike Meadows went to jail. Meet your two cellmates. Front and back.
Yeah.
Say hello to my little friend.
I was going to make a salad joke in there, but I'm not going to.
That's good.
Now,
we'd have to toss it out.
Now, if the indictment is actually not returned or not proven to the satisfaction of the grand jury, the two terms that are used is ignoramus or not a true bill.
It's an ignoramus?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've actually never seen that before. And I only learned about it when I was doing my research for this.
So you present it. And if they find there's not enough evidence, how do they phrase that? It is an ignoramus finding or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, I bet that lawyer that presents the stuff and he's told he's an ignoramus, I bet that doesn't go over well.
Well, I'm not saying he's an ignoramus. They're saying that it's an ignoramus, I guess, presentment.
Yeah, but if you're the guy, it's like the smeller's the feller.
So I don't think that's actually used probably very much anymore.
Smeller the feller?
The not a true bill is probably the one that's used more often. Yeah. The smeller's the feller. I use that daily.
Smelt it, he dealt it.
Now, if that does happen, then the defendant is basically said to have been no-billed by the grand jury.
I've seen that before. I've seen signs that say post no bills.
Yeah, that's something different, I think. But
oh, okay. Yeah.
Now, the first instance of a grand jury can be traced all the way back to 1166, back in Henry II of England. So the grand jury goes back a long way.
Now, do they sit in there like all day and have several come in during the day? It's not like you just do one and go home.
No.
You're just there.
It'll be one case after another. Just bam, 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 bam. You'll see.
So you know a lot of secrets at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
And you're not supposed to discuss it with anybody else or anything like that. And that's one distinction that they always have if you are asking questions of a jury before a trial. Have you ever served on a grand jury? You say, well, what kind of grand jury? Sometimes they'll say grand jury. Sometimes they'll say petit jury.
Mm-hmm.
So if they say grand jury, you don't say like, really? What was that all about? Did you return any? Did you find the ignoramuses?
Yeah, that lawyer that lost.
But basically, you just know that they served on a grand jury and that's kind of different. So the grand jury is actually talked about in the Magna Carta as well.
Yeah.
That's the Great Charter of Liberties from 1215 by King John. I don't think we've talked about that yet, but that's...
No, we have.
That's kind of the...
I know of that from grade school, the Magna Carta.
Yeah, that kind of is one of the bases of all common law, or where it's all essentially kind of traced back to.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always wanted to make a legal argument that went all the way back to the Magna Carta, but I haven't done that yet.
I would like to cite as evidence verse 3 of the Magna Carta.
Exactly.
That'd be pretty good.
It would.
That's some deep law.
I think there's like 63 parts, and the grand jury is mentioned in part 63, I believe.
So it was an afterthought.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'll just throw that in there.
Oh, yeah. By the way, and there's grand juries. What? I just had to throw that in.
The grand jury...
Okay, John.
...was actually abolished in Ireland, New Zealand, France, England, and most of the common law countries. To give you some times, it was abolished in Ireland in 1969, New Zealand 1961, France 1808, and England and Wales in 1948. So it's been gone for a while in most places because we've kind of switched to the whole state is the prosecutor type thing. But here in the U.S., we stick with it because we like our traditions.
Well, it saves money, too.
How so?
Well, it's one less level of people that you're paying to do something. Anytime you've got lawyers and judges and all the, 23 people sitting in there, that's a whole nother level of money you're paying.
It is, but it also affords more protections to the accused, which I think is a good thing. You know, it's one of a, I always, whenever I'm talking to a jury, I always tell them how they're doing their American duty by being here and serving on a jury. And I'm very happy they're here and proud of them for doing it and blah, 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 and all that stuff. It's a very common.
Oh, kissing up to
them. Yeah, it's a very common thing that most lawyers will do. So
if you're ever on one, just know that they're just blowing smoke up your butt. Huh?
No, I honestly believe that. I mean, you can't.
Oh, yeah.
You can't have the wheels of justice without a jury.
And then when they don't return the kind of finding that you want, then it's like, those ignoramuses. That's where that comes from.
Pretty much. So, one interesting tidbit, we talked about the musical Hamilton with Riley back, it's been quite some time ago.
Right.
But Aaron Burr was actually indicted before a grand jury in the death of Alexander Hamilton.
Right.
The interesting thing about that was that it was a New Jersey case, but the indictment was thrown out later because on the basis that Hamilton, even though he was shot in New Jersey, he died in New York.
Right.
So they threw out the indictment based on that.
Well, and then it also came to be that he was the vice president of the United States. So.
Well, there's that.
So they couldn't do anything.
So,
you know, whenever we talk about juries in other episodes, when we talked about juries and jury duty, you always see the people. It's funny to me because I made the comment that time about trying to get out of jury duty and I wouldn't want to be on a jury.
Yeah.
And how would you get out of it? And then you have the people that are right in and it's like, I want to be on a jury. I love being on a jury. I've done it several times and I love doing it. And it's funny to me. It's like, there's no middle of the road on this.
Yeah.
It's like, and I don't know what, I'm not saying it's 50-50, but whatever the split is, you either really want to be involved in it or you don't want to have anything to do with it.
Well, I think the thing they don't realize sometimes is that if you're on an interesting case with good lawyers and you're watching it, then that's going to be a good experience for you. It's going to be very entertaining. You're not going to be bored. I mean, you're going to enjoy that. I mean, it's going to be hard.
But it's a hardship on you for your time is what I'm getting at. What if it drags out 3 or 4 weeks? You know, you can't go anywhere. You can't do anything.
But you get to experience something that you normally wouldn't otherwise. And it's probably something like you'd see in movies or reading a book, things like that. But now if you get picked for a jury that is trying to determine whether or not X Corp sold their widgets at a price that was not fair for
whatever,
and you sit and listen to 2 weeks. 2 weeks of testimony about from economists and things like that. I mean, you're going to be wanting to take that little pencil and pad they give you, take your notes and jam it through your nose.
But it does take up, there's a lot of people involved, and I don't really think about that. Like this number that I saw here says in any given year, 450,000 people can get called to serve on state and federal juries in Manhattan alone.
Wow.
That's just in Manhattan. 450,000 people.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of bodies being brought into this process is what I'm saying. And for me, it's like, how would you get out of it? And so I did a little research, and these are some common methods that are brought up. Now, I'm not advocating any of these.
Yeah. Don't do these. I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there. I don't even know what they are, but I'm going to tell you, don't do it.
But the first was a list that they put together of people that supposedly had been through this and how they got out of it. Claim you're incredibly racist. Now, that might get you out of jury duty, but you need to remember you've got to go back out and live in society.
Yeah.
So this may cause you more problems than it's worth. You might be better off to stay on a jury.
Well, I think there's a Seinfeld episode exactly on that point, if I remember correctly.
Mention you were a victim of the same crime that the trial is about.
Well, that's actually something that they'll ask you before you get started. So, I mean, they'll say, hey, have anybody been accused of this similar crime? Or has anybody been a victim of this crime?
Yeah, so you just say yes.
Yeah, and that's actually
part of that voir dire.
Yeah, and that's actually a reason why people get struck for cause a lot of times, too.
Another thing they said, just let them know that you're interested in jury nullification. And they probably want to get rid of you because they don't want you to discuss jury nullification with other people.
Yeah, well, jury nullification is where you basically say, I don't care what the law says, I'm going to do my own thing.
And then pretend to be hard of hearing. Say, what? Huh, every time they ask something.
Excuse me?
That's right.
What?
Yeah, because they don't want to have to go through that. Confess that you had already heard about the crime, and then you should be act like you're totally biased one way or the other in the case because you already know about it.
Yeah. Oh, I've read about this. No, I know, I've already made my mind up.
That's right. Mention any incarcerated relatives that the prosecutors are generally looking for people. And so, you know, you have relatives in jail and you know how the system works.
Yeah.
keep accidentally falling asleep, claim to be a psychic, appear incredibly confused, get a good Valley Girl impression or something like that, and, you know, just, what? What do you mean? I don't understand. Get a doctor's note for some kind of medical problem, show up with a baby, say, you don't have any choice, you have to have it, I have to breastfeed. So that will only work if you're a guy, a girl, though.
Yeah. And you've also been having lactose cookies.
Tell them you're a body language expert.
Mm.
Because no defense attorney will want you there while they're defending their guilty defendant if you're a body language expert.
Accused.
Right. Mention that you've studied law and watched a lot of Law and Order. Because then you're going to be a know-it-all on these things, and they're probably not going to want to deal with you. Hit on everyone, even the judge. Just go ahead and hit on them. Everybody that's in there.
I find black robes incredibly sexy.
Especially if they're making fishing lures under them. Suggest that you're a boozer. They suggest maybe you soak your jacket in vodka or something like that. They said, don't be drunk when you go there. It's not good to be in a federal courthouse or something while you're drunk. But if you smell drunk, that's okay.
Yeah.
So they might want to get rid of you. Rail against the judicial system it's a bad system.
This is the American flag in here has fringe. Fringe is an admiralty court. I do not recognize the admiralty court's jurisdiction.
That's right.
Need to be insured.
Sovereign citizen. Claim to have an overactive bladder.
Oh, yeah.
Let them know that you're going to need breaks every 10 to 15 minutes.
Well, that's one thing they ask, too, is like they may have a medical condition that's going to prohibit them from serving on a jury. So well,
I don't know if it's a medical condition, but I drink my 2 cups of coffee in the morning, and I got to go visit the little boy's room there about every 15 minutes. I don't know if that's a medical condition. Works itself out by noon.
Yeah.
Comes and goes, I guess you could say.
Yeah, when I have my coffee in the morning, I have to visit the it's a little bit more than the little boy's room I have to visit. It's
the hung jury's room?
Well, no, it's the normal dude's bathroom that I need.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Usually a couple times after having some coffee.
But one of the ones that I thought was best is they asked a bunch of lawyers who have actually been through this process, and they asked them about some of them. They said, famed criminal defense lawyer Alan Dershowitz.
Mm-hmm.
You heard of him?
Yep.
He recalled, when one of my books came out about how I defend people, someone on a jury in the Southern District in Manhattan was kicked off for carrying it. So the book was 1982's The Best Defense, which talked a lot about the presumption of innocence and was critical of prosecutors. Word got around and a whole bunch of people came in carrying my book. I think that's why my book made it as a bestseller. But actually just carrying that book in, a lot of people would ask for them to be removed.
Well, maybe I need to write a book about how to get out of jury duty. And have all the jurors buy that to carry it.
Yeah.
That'd be a guaranteed bestseller.
Be a bestseller.
Well, I bet I could sell 450,000 copies in Manhattan alone.
It said, being a lawyer, you ask a lot of questions of the jurors, and sometimes you get some awkward answers. Said, you ask them a million things. Have you ever been a juror before? Have you been involved with a lawyer? Have you had a deposition taken before? And the guy says, I had one case where he said the attorney on the other side asked, have you ever had experience with an attorney? And the woman answered, you picked me up in a bar 5 years ago. She was excused.
Yeah.
So they said, some excuses work, some don't. A person who said, I only trust one lawyer and he's dead, was excused. Another tried to use man's best friend, claiming he had no one to walk his dog. And when they asked him, how often do you walk his dog? He said, I don't actually walk him. He goes through and in and out the dog door in the back in my fenced-in yard. So he didn't get off. One person successfully avoided jury duty by proclaiming, I don't believe in the law. I was like, what? People who come up with cockamamie answers to get out of jury duty make you question if you really want them anyway.
Yeah. For the most part, you got to think if somebody really doesn't want to be there, do you want to try to make them be there?
Well, that's right. Because they're not going to want to. They're not going to want to cooperate with you.
And they're not going to want to listen. Really, when you're trying to pick a jury, you want somebody that you think is going to be receptive to your arguments. That's essentially what you're looking for.
One woman made sure the court knew jury duty might interfere with her upcoming surgery. I asked, would you like to step outside to discuss this in private with the defense lawyer and myself? And she said, no, it's just a boob job. And some excuses are out of this world. One juror with a geography issue said simply, my planet does not believe in the jury system. So he got out of that way. Now, the other part of it is that I go into, there's a show out now that I believe goes into this, that show on TV called Bull. Have you seen that?
I have not.
It's about a guy that helps with jury selection. He's not a lawyer. Mm-hmm. He's one of those scientific guys that's supposed to help with jury selection.
Right.
And he checked into this about jury selection, everything. And it all began with the Harrisburg 7 in 1972 was one of the first cases to use that. That was a case where a bunch of nuns and priests were being convicted of plotting to kidnap Henry Kissinger. So it was pretty wild story. But anyway, thanks to well-publicized roles of jury selection, experts in headline-grabbing cases such as the O.J. Simpson trial, the first Rodney King trial, and the $2.9 million hot coffee lawsuit against McDonald's, scientific jury stacking has attracted public interest, not to mention trepidation. But it's funny, even the ones that are involved in it say, well, some people believe in it, and some people don't.
Yeah. I mean, you can go really in-depth with it. And whenever you are getting ready to have a jury trial, you will get a list of potential jurors who are going to be on the panel. Mm-hmm. You'll see who their employer is, what they do. You know, I mean, there's a lot of information on there that you get to look at ahead of time. So you can try to see what demographic you're working with and what you want to try to get.
But, you know, the findings that leave this unregulated and certification devoid jury selection industry of, you know, it's there's no certification in it or anything like that. It's just somebody presents himself as a professional. And on one hand, the jury selection experts would do well to showcase their success, both to increase business and encourage further research on the matter. On the other hand, they don't want to boast at being able to violate people's rights by gaining an impartial jury.
Yeah.
So I said it's either expensive or a waste of time if it's ineffective, or it is effective and therefore unfair.
Yeah.
Because you're stacking a jury is what you're doing by doing that.
Well, you're always trying to stack a jury. I don't care what this says. You're trying to stack a jury in your favor.
Well, but you shouldn't be trying to.
Why should you not? Why do you think you have all these questions you ask people? Why do you think you get all this information? Because you're trying to pick the best jury for your client or your side.
Well, that's true, but I mean, isn't the point of it being fair and not just getting the people that you want? Not just getting people you think will say what you want?
No.
No?
No.
Shouldn't it be fair?
It is fair because I'm playing by the rules to pick the people that I want out of this particular panel. Whenever I think of picking a jury, and this is going to sound kind of strange, I always think of a song.
Yeah.
And it is The Gambler by Kenny Rogers.
Yep. You don't know when to hold them and when to fold them, huh?
It's true, but he says, "Son, I've made a life out of reading people's faces and knowing when their cards were there by the way they held their eyes." And I think that's what you do with the jury selection. You read people's faces and you see, you know, when you make these threshold determinations about whether or not you want to keep this person on the jury or not, you have to like kind of see if you think they're receptive to you and your client. And if they're not, you got to get them out of there some way or another. And if they're receptive to you, then you want to keep them. I mean, I think that's what it is. You do want to stack the jury in your favor.
Well, I understand that to a point, but you want a fair and correct decision.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Let me tell you something. For a taste of your whiskey, I want to give you some advice.
All right, Kenny.
If you're going to court, you want to pick the best jury you can with the jurors that are there. There's no doubt about it.
All right. Well, since even the practitioners of scientific jury selection are reluctant to emphasize the science of what they do, some folks think it's time to get rid of that business altogether. One way to do so would be to do away with peremptory challenges. England did that in 1988.
Yeah.
There are no peremptory challenges there.
Yeah, look where they are now.
Where are they?
I don't know.
They're right where they've always been. Right in the middle of the UK.
I want my challenges. Don't take my challenges away.
If lawyers aren't allowed to remove jurors at will, there'd be no need for them to consult with jury selection experts.
Nope, not going to happen.
Sure enough, the English legal system appears to be largely unfamiliar with the scientific jury system. That's because they don't need it, because you can't strike anybody on it.
You got to have your strikes.
Well, I said the main thing is, if you want to get out of it, be verbal, but be subtle, and be biased. You've already heard about the case. I don't mean racist. You're biased in that you already have a feeling about the way things are whether they're fair or legal or whatever like that.
Yeah.
And one guy says that, he said it's actually easier than thought. He had talked to all these people and he was worried about it. He wanted to get out of it, didn't want to do it. He said they basically just brought everybody out in the hall one at a time and said, look, do you want to do this? No. Okay, get out. And yeah. Excused them.
Now, if you have a big enough pool, you can do that. But you're not always afforded that luxury. Sometimes you need 12 jurors, well, and an alternate. So you probably need 14 jurors, and you only have 20 people there.
Well, they got that problem here a lot.
Yeah.
You read about it in the paper all the time where they're threatening to go arrest people and things like that for not showing up when they're asked to report for jury duty.
Well, you have to do that occasionally to shake it up a little bit.
There's been a few times that trials have been delayed because they couldn't seat a jury.
Yeah. Well, I mean, basically, if you don't show up for jury duty, the whole system grinds to a halt.
That's true, because if you're not there to say yay or nay, ain't nothing going to happen.
Exactly. Well, I think it's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy some questions about some of the legal terms we talked about. On occasion, he asked me questions as well. I don't think from looking in his eyes and reading his faces that he has any questions for me right now. If you can only see the face he was making right now, you'd be a little worried. So the first question for the Legal Briefs, what are the three kind of jury panels that we discussed?
Petit jury, a grand jury, and a coroner's jury.
That's right. The coroner's jury sometimes is called an inquest, which we don't really deal with that anymore. The petit jury is the jury that we talk about a lot as far as, for the most part, what you see on TV when you actually see a trial. And the grand jury is kind of secret, and we can't really talk about that.
Secret.
But they are the kind of the threshold to decide whether or not a criminal charge can go forward.
They wear dark robes and chant.
Maybe. I don't even know. This next term is really unfair that I'm even asking Tommy this, because I just mentioned it in passing, and he didn't ask me what it was. Spoliation.
Spoliation?
Yeah.
That's when you get soap on your louver, on your louvois, and you scrub real hard and you exfoliate your skin.
It's actually the destruction of evidence.
Oh.
And it's one of the reasons why a grand jury indictment might be sealed. So basically the accused does not have a chance to go out and destroy evidence. And that term is called spoliation.
Oh, so he doesn't know about it, so he can go cover his tracks.
Huh? Yeah, you smash the hard drives.
Oh.
But that's what that term is called. Destroying evidence, spoliation.
Yeah, old Jared the Subway guy should have thought of that, huh?
Yeah.
He got exfoliated.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about him. I will say this. I think he's an ignoramus. Do you know what that means? What is ignoramus?
That means that the grand jury did not return an indictment.
Exactly. It's a term I have never seen before until today when I was looking up this different things about grand juries. So probably the more proper term you see is not a true bill.
Not a true bill.
Yep. Whereas if someone is indicted, it will say a true bill is returned.
I probably said that about Clinton.
What's that?
Not a true bill.
Not a true bill? I don't know.
When he said, I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
One of the interesting things, actually, it's funny you bring up Slick Willie, is that he was the first sitting U.S. president to testify before a grand jury, I believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it was a secret?
No, I think they told all about it.
They televised it.
Yeah. They didn't televise it, but they said he was testifying before the grand jury. But what he testified about, I don't think they were able to disclose that. But it was about the whole Whitewater thing back then. So, yeah. But anyway, that's the episode on juries.
Well, what about, I had one for you. The term that you use, boudoir, isn't that what it is when you're eliminating jurors?
Voir dire?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That one.
Boudoir?
I thought it was boudoir.
No, I think that's a sultry person's bedroom.
Oh, a sultry person? That's not anybody that's a sultry person?
It's my understanding that if you're stepping into a boudoir, it's probably a sultry situation.
What about a salty one?
A salty situation?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a bedroom.
Yeah. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.